Next case is 06-115, David Curl versus Volkswagen of America.
Good morning. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, I'm Robert Kehoe, and it's my privilege to appear before you this morning on behalf of the appellant, Volkswagen of America.
Would you pull that microphone closer to yourself, sir? We can't hear you.
Certainly. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, please, for rebuttal. This case arises out of the sale of a used car by the original owner to a second or downstream owner who, by the rulings of the lower courts, obtained new car warranty protections. There are essentially two issues before the court. The first, what constitutes a new motor vehicle under the Ohio Lemon Law, revised code section 1345.72? And secondly, whether privity of contract is a prerequisite to making a breach of implied warranty claim in Ohio under revised code section 1302.27. There are several statutes and cases interpreting statutes in the opinions of the lower courts in the briefing. I would offer for the court's consideration the following construct. The Ohio legislature adopted in 1987 its version of the Lemon Law. It was designed to create an objective standard by which new car protections could be evaluated for buyers of new cars. It attempted to clarify and remove the subjectivity of interpreting Ohio's version of the Uniform Commercial Code as it pertained to express warranty and implied warranty of merchantability and fitness for intended purpose. Along came the Federal Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act that put some parameters on how to interpret the state's version of revised code section 1302.27. Within this construct, new car buyers and used car buyers are treated differently. Buyers of new cars obtain Lemon Law protections as a first measure of relief. If you fit within certain time frames and mileage limitations and meet certain presumptions, you have a full menu of remedies available to you. From a pleading standpoint, you never get to the warranty provisions if you fit within the Lemon Law protections. If the Lemon Law protections have expired, you have a written express warranty that came with the automobile that typically provides a time and mileage limitation whereby the manufacturer will repair and replace. If for some reason that fails of its essential purpose, then the owner can default to the parallel breach of implied warranty of merchantability and fitness for intended purpose. Used car buyers do not have the same protections for a very good reason. They pay less for a vehicle that has had wear and tear arising from the passage of time and usage.
Which protections don't they get? Judge Ford went through, he includes the protection of the Lemon Law for this car buyer, but there's the tricky business, as he acknowledges, and as the dissent agonizes over as to whether or not this is a new car. So let's lay the Lemon Law aside, taking your statutory construct. What takes it out of the express warranties and the implied warranties for this purchaser?
The passage of time or mileage takes it out of the Lemon Law.
Right.
What remains is the balance of the express warranty period. So if the vehicle came with a 36,000-mile, 36-month warranty. That transfers with the vehicle to the downstream buyer.
And you don't dispute that this buyer was entitled to that?
No, there is no dispute that this buyer was entitled to the balance of the express warranty.
And the car was repaired?
The car was repaired at no cost to the owner.
So the dispute here is all over the application of the Lemon Law to this car purchaser.
That is correct, Your Honor. The central issue is whether a used car buyer, through an analysis of the varying statutes, would get the protections of the Lemon Law, which we maintain applies only to new car buyers, and for very good reason. It is commercially unreasonable to expect the manufacturer to warrant a vehicle that has been used for some period of time after it left its control, and after which time the manufacturer had no way to monitor the usage of the vehicle, how it was maintained, whether or not recalls were performed.
And Judge Ford gets there by saying the title never left a dealer. I guess his analysis would be a car could be at the dealer, it could be a demo, people could take it out with the prospect of purchasing it and not buy it, and it gets some miles on it. That's still a new car, wouldn't you say, under the Lemon Law?
I think the court is really addressing two issues. I think the trial court was addressing the facts of this case in the context of the Lemon Law, which provides that new cars obtain those protections, but look to a definition of new motor vehicle outside of the Lemon Law and look to the dealer statute, which is Title 45 of the revised code.
So how are we to decide this case for you? How would you define new car?
New car is a vehicle that leaves the manufacturer's control in the condition it was in at the time it was manufactured and delivered to a distributor for sale to the ultimate consumer. I think where the lower court got sidetracked is the effort to stretch the facts of this case to fit within the Lemon Law, and when it didn't fit, look to the definition of a motor vehicle. And here is the factual distinction in this case. Stadium Lincoln Mercury is an automobile dealer. It does sell Volkswagens. However, it is also in the auto leasing business. It is also in the business of providing loaners to people who come in for repairs. Stadium bought this car. They titled it. They're no different than the lessor of a vehicle for 2 or 3 or 4 years. Every title to a leased vehicle remains in the name of the lessor. It is simply a red herring to look at how title is held to determine whether it's a new vehicle. As the Bowtowns and Ford decision highlights, the owner of a new car really isn't concerned with the paperwork before they get it. They're really concerned with how many miles has it been driven and how well has it been maintained. And as
so if it had been on the lot and the dealer had sent it home with some repair customers who also look, you know, the dealer's hoping, you know, they know, you know, some customers are regulars, trade a car every year, every 2 years, and so
right.
The dealer knows it's time. Why don't I send this home with him while his car's getting the oil changed? And they do that a few times, and it gets 500-600 miles on it. Still a new car? And I mean, how do we define this?
Typically, car dealerships would have loaners available for people who come in for maintenance. They have demos that are available for test drives. So if somebody comes in has an interest in purchasing a car, they have a particular model available for demonstration purposes.
So a demo would not be a new car, then?
A demo is not a new car.
Even though it only had 500 miles on it?
Typically, a demonstrator, Your Honor, would have more than 500 miles. A new car that has been driven off the truck, driven off the lot, driven into the shop to be prepped will have some nominal mileage. There's no dispute that those are new vehicles. Here we have a car that has been driven for almost a year and has more than 10,000 miles that was used as a rental, the same way Hertz or Avis would rent a car, to people that you don't know how they've maintained it. We know that the recall wasn't performed here. We don't know how it was maintained. And to ask
and the purchaser knew that it had been a leased car.
There is no dispute that the owner knew he was buying a used car. There's no dispute that his expectations were met. There's no dispute he bought at a deep discount because it was not a new car.
And
correct.
We could end the lemon law question by just saying, well, it got to a year before it was a year old in terms of usage before this trouble happened anyway. So he's outside the lemon law from that standpoint.
Your Honor is correct. I don't think we need to look beyond the statute. The statute uses the word new, and giving it its ordinary meaning, new means new. It talks about the original delivery date, and original means original. The interpretation of 1345.72 is that simple. For a car that is new, it has 1 year from the original delivery date or 18,000 miles of lemon law protection, whichever occurs first. There is no reason for this court to tamper with that statute. It is functioning exactly the way the legislature intended.
So, counsel, are you saying we need not define the word new for purposes of the lemon law? It seemed to me that one of the problems here was the Court of Appeals said there is no definition for the word new vehicle. There's a definition of vehicle, but not new vehicle, and so therefore went to 4517.01c to pick up the word new and use that definition. I mean, if we were to find in your favor, would it not be important to define the term for purposes of lemon law?
Your Honor is correct that that's exactly what the 11th District did. It is our position that it is not necessary to go outside the statute to define what the word new means. It is our belief that the plain meaning of the word new is understood, is not ambiguous, and doesn't need to be defined. And we don't believe that you need to go into another section of the revised code, which does not pertain to warranties for automobiles, new or used, for a definition. It's defined under 45, the dealer statute, for a different set of reasons. Those definitions are not applicable to the lemon law and would not be necessary.
So basically, the lemon law would encompass a vehicle that had de minimis usage as or mileage on it, as opposed to 10,000, which I don't think you would classify as de minimis.
That's correct.
Would you address the lack of privity argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Privity of contract is a common law doctrine that goes back to the seminal case of Winterbottom versus Wright. We believe that it is codified in Ohio's version of the Uniform Commercial Code, where it indicates that implied warranties are given by the seller. The seller is, by definition, the individual or entity that is in a contractual relationship with the buyer. This case demonstrates exactly why privity of contract is necessary. As I mentioned in my response to Judge Pfeiffer's questions, in this case, the original buyer used the car for almost a year and 10,000 miles. During that period of time, its original condition was altered in a way that the manufacturer could not contemplate and could not be held accountable for. It is commercially unreasonable to hold a manufacturer responsible for the behaviors of the original buyer or any downstream buyer. In this case, the
car... And that's because the car dealership didn't participate in the recall and correct the original error of the manufacturer.
That is correct. In this case, the original buyer happened to be Stadium Lincoln Mercury, which was in the business of renting cars. The original buyer could have been any member of this court or anybody in this courtroom. And the original owner maybe maintains the car on schedule, maybe does not. Gets a recall campaign in the mail, maybe takes it in, maybe does not. In the case of a rental, people typically don't take care of the car the same way it's theirs. They have it for a day or a week, and they turn it in.
But the intervening fact here is the lack of participating in the recall with the electrical harness, which then what precipitated the smoking and the damage to the car. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
And the manufacturer, you would say, met its obligation to the downstream possessor of that car, whether it's the dealership or a private individual, by issuing the recall and presumably performing the repairs free of charge.
That's correct, Your Honor, but it's really a two-step process. The responsibility was discharged by issuing the recall to the original owner. That was followed up by a repair and replacement at no cost under the Express Limited warranty that came with the car that transferred from the original buyer to the second downstream owner. And so that individual, Mr. Curl, was not left without remedy. He was left with the remedy of repair and replacement at no cost under the Express warranty, but would not have obtained the Lemon Law protections or breach of implied warranty protections that would have been available to the new car owner.
Thank you, Mr. Keogh.
Thank you.
Mr. Luxenberg.
May it please the court. My name is Mitch Luxenberg, and I've had the privilege of representing David Curl for the past 4 years in this action he instituted against Volkswagen of America. I'd like to correct a couple factual and procedural issues before I get into the substantive nature. First, there are two issues before the court. One is the new vehicle, the definition of new motor vehicle under Ohio's Lemon Law. That's one, and that's a two-prong examination. And the second element is the requirement of privity of the implied warranty. So there is the need to address both. It wasn't just the trial court, it was also the appellate court who had found in favor of David Curl on his Lemon Law claims as well as implied warranty. At the trial court level, the argument raised by Volkswagen was that the vehicle, not that it wasn't new and afforded protection under the Lemon Law, but rather it was afforded protection of the Lemon Law, however the time for protection had expired to Mr. Curl. And that's in there, the issues that they raised to the trial court. So it was never that this car wasn't new or that a demo didn't qualify, but that it wasn't new when he bought it, it was new when Stadium bought it, and therefore that's when the one-year time period took place. So when David Curl purchased this vehicle, he didn't purchase it after 1 year, he purchased it before 1 year. So the argument would be he is afforded the balance of that one-year protection under the Lemon Law. That was their argument at the trial court. When they lost that, the arguments shifted to the appellate court to some variation of that. However, the appellant at the, Volkswagen, the appellant at the appellate level acknowledged that the trial court was proper in adopting the fact that there was in a trial case, Browning versus Isuzu. They adopted the holding that Mr. Curl is afforded Lemon Law protection, but again they contested that the Lemon Law period expired, that we had been past the one-year period of when Mr. Curl took possession of the vehicle.
And if we were to agree with that,
correct,
and avoid the quagmire of what is new and what isn't, you're still left with the implied warranty claim? Is that what would be left if you lost the Lemon Law claim?
If we lost the Lemon Law claim, we would be left with the breach of implied warranty claim and just the privity issue, because there was liability found for a breach of implied warranty. The only issue raised at the trial level was the privity requirement.
And what remedy goes with that?
You are entitled to the diminution in value as warranted and as received at the time of delivery.
Okay, so there would be a damages.
There would be
questions.
Damages as well as incidental and consequential. And we did move the court to hold the ruling on damages and attorney's fees, et cetera, because we knew where we were going with this one. What I would also
if you're finished with that thought, at some point, would you kind of set the context for this as to why the express warranty was not sufficient, and what remedy that your client may have sought against the dealer in this case. This is a context for your arguments.
I want to get to that, but I want to address one quick point. And we talked about how the dissent had agonized over the finding that this was a new car. I want to be very clear, there was no dissent at the appellate court level. It was a concurring opinion.
Yes.
That did agree with the ultimate holding, so there was no dissent at the appellate level.
Although
it did read like
the
one.
The concurrence said, I don't know how we can define new this way, but I'm going to just forget about that. Just it's kind of like, I feel sorry for the plaintiff here, so we get there somehow. And the concurrence really was not very persuasive to me.
It was not persuasive. However, it did affirm its concurrence in the majority's definition of motor vehicle. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure that the record was clear of that. Under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, the express warranty does not have to fail of its essential purpose. The primary case that was referred to by the defendant in this court was the case of Goddard versus General Motors, which predated the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. This court, which ties into the implied warranty claim, never held that privity was required to sue a manufacturer. Rather, it said to get damages under an implied warranty, the express warranty has to fail of its essential purpose. So pre the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, you did have to prove that the express warranty with the limited remedy of repair or replacement failed of its essential purpose before you got to the implied warranty count. However, when the General Assembly adopted the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, after Goddard, you can bring express warranty and implied warranty at the same time, because under implied warranty, the good was not fit at the fit for the purpose it was intended at the time it was delivered. So you don't need to prove that the express warranty failed of its purpose and that it was insufficient to the consumer. You can bring both actions and maintain them at the same time, and you're entitled to damages under both. And as a matter of fact, the damages are different. One permits incidental and consequential, and the other doesn't provide for both. So there needs to be no proof under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act for a breach of implied warranty that the express warranty failed of its essential purpose. And in fact, that's what the trial court found, that there is no need for privity following the 11th District and the Supreme Court decisions, as well as the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. So we don't need to prove that it failed of its essential purpose. Under implied warranty, the elements are different, and you can maintain a cause of action. And as often happens, you'll prevail on one count but not the other. You'll find that they fixed the car every time, all 25 times it went in, and therefore there was a breach of implied warranty but not a breach of the express warranty.
Maybe you've answered the question, but can we affirm in this case on the privity issue without changing the law of Ohio?
You absolutely can affirm on privity. The case Winterbottom was a case from 1812 regarding literally items that entered the stream of commerce literally and went upstream. It dealt with the foreseeability. In 1916, Justice Cardozo started to abolish the privity requirement set by Winterbottom. In 1958, this court started to abolish privity. And as a matter of fact, I would argue that the present state of the law in Ohio is not that there are exceptions to the privity requirement, but yet there remain a few situations where this court has yet to abolish the exceptions. And as a matter of fact, there are no standing opinions before the Ohio State Supreme Court where privity is required, but rather there are a few appellate decisions which predate all the Supreme Court decisions which require privity. But beginning in 1958, this court in Rogers versus Tony Holm did not require privity. In 1965, Inglis versus Isuzu, followed by Iacona versus Anderson Concrete. And then again in 1989, this court in Chemtrol cited Iacona and Inglis for the proposition that the Supreme Court does not require privity in a breach of implied warranty. So you're not changing the law, you're only affirming all of the prior decisions of this court. And as a matter of fact, in the case of Goddard versus General Motors, there wasn't even a discussion of the privity issue. It was just whether or not you got to damages under it. So this court has yet to hold, particularly in an automobile case, that privity is required.
So, counsel, you would suggest that there should be no difference in the remedies that a used car buyer has from those that a new car buyer has? Wouldn't that be the outcome of what you're advocating here?
No. And I do want to make sure I reserve a little bit of time on the Lemon Law. However, under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, there is no difference to the protection afforded a new consumer and a used consumer. That's the statute itself. The damages are defined not by new versus used, but by the fact that the product was warranted. Now, the manufacturer argues that we can't be responsible for what happens down the line. Well, yeah, you can. You warrant it. Transferring it to a second or third or fourth person doesn't void their warranty. What does void their warranty are affirmative defenses of abuse, misuse, neglect, modification. They're not expected to have strict liability. What they have is, and the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act says it, if you buy a product and it is warranted, you are afforded the same protection regardless of the age of the product. You decided to warrant it. We're deciding that you're going to stand behind that warranty. And the damages are the diminution in value, whether you bought that car new or used. Let's say David Curl bought this car, 0 miles on it, first person who's got the car. He doesn't have a problem until the second year. He's outside of the Lemon Law, but he's still afforded protection under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. If one person held it for year one and he held it for year two, those two people in the eyes of the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act are the same. It's the diminution in value. Now, the damages are going to be different because you paid less. So you've paid less, the diminution in value is going to be less. I also want to bring out, they say, he afforded himself an excellent bargain because of this used product. MSRP on this car was $17,500. He paid $17,000 for the car. There's nothing in the record that says he got some phenomenal deal on this vehicle. There's also nothing in the record that says Stadium Lincoln Mercury is in the business of leasing vehicles or in rental vehicles, and I want to make sure that's very clear. The
record Mr. Keough suggests that the car has been fully repaired and restored. Is there a dispute about that?
There's no dispute that the car was repaired after 86 days in the shop. Within the first 120 days of Mr. Curl's possession of the car. However, suit was filed while the car was in the shop. And I would also like to
add, would it make a difference if it was repaired then under the Lemon Law or under the Magnuson-Moss?
Yes, because the damages are different under Lemon Law and Mag-Moss. And that's where I want to talk about Lemon Law briefly, unless we have any more questions.
Yes, I think Justice Cupp had asked originally what remedies were sought against the dealer, Stadium. Could you respond to that,
Very
please?
Happy you mentioned that. The issue of privity comes up because Stadium Lincoln Mercury didn't warrant the vehicle. Volkswagen of America warranted it. And every dealership in the country puts a disclaimer of implied warranties. And when you don't warrant the vehicle, there is no implied warranty. You're permitted to disclaim the implied warranty. But when you warrant it, you can disclaim the implied. So there is no cause of action against the dealership under this. The only cause of action that we have is against the manufacturer. The manufacturer could have turned around and filed a counterclaim against the dealership. However, this creates into the Lemon Law. It is an authorized dealership by their own admission, and they are not allowed to claim abuse, misuse, abuse, and negligence by their authorized dealership. So in this particular case, they don't even have a remedy against the dealership because it's their authorized agent for warranty repairs. So in this case, the only two parties are plaintiff and Volkswagen of America.
And counsel, then the intervening negligence of Stadium to participate in the recall, which was the very basis for the problem with this car.
That would be a defense that they could have raised under the implied warranty, arguably, however, that has never been raised. They have never argued that their dealership screwed this up. They argued that there was no privity and that the vehicle was outside of the one-year period. So this issue of what is new is new.
They had raised that.
Yeah.
What's your response to that breach by Stadium and its effect on a manufacturer's warranty?
I would say that that would have created a genuine issue of material fact, and our summary judgment would have been denied. However, there was no question of any fact.
That was never put forth as a defense?
No, never put forth as a defense at any level. I only have about 2 minutes. The issue of new motor vehicle, and we keep talking about this word new, and I was making the same mistake for a while. It's actually three words, new motor vehicle. And it's presumed that when the legislature enacted the Ohio Revised Code and the Lemon Law, that they understood what new motor vehicle was defined as, because it's defined elsewhere in the Ohio Revised Code. And it is defined as any new motor, any vehicle where the title has not transferred to any ultimate purchaser by the manufacturer, supplier, distributor, or a dealership. In this particular case, when the dealership bought the car, they claimed themselves as a reseller of the vehicle, and they did not pay tax on the vehicle, which means they either intended to resell this vehicle or committed some sort of tax fraud, and I'm sure it's not the latter. Their intent was to resell this vehicle, be it was a demo, they wanted to use it as a loaner, they had no intention of keeping this car, and in the end, they actually did resell this vehicle.
Under your interpretation, yes, then, ma'am, any dealer that also has a leasing rental business could sell a car that's 4 years old and still be covered by lemon law?
No, because if they had a leasing business, it would be a different entity, and they were purchasing it for purposes other than, they would not be purchasing.
They maintained this was a lease vehicle.
It was not a leased vehicle. It was used by the dealership. There's no evidence
as
that
a loaner?
It was used as a loaner in
their
shop.
Okay, so then again, under your interpretation, if they have a loaner and they keep it 4 years, it's a new car.
If they kept it for 4 years, as long as that vehicle had less than 18,000 miles on the vehicle, yes. But I want to be clear, that's not my interpretation. That's the definition under the statute, and it's the interpretation of the trial court and the appellate court.
Definition if you accept the motor vehicle dealer interpretation of a vehicle, not the lemon law version. You have to read it in conjunction with another statute to get to your interpretation.
Which is required under statutory interpretation. Right. And I would say it's not the new vehicle definition, it's actually the Ohio Revised Code definition of a new motor vehicle. Right. And if you look at the definition of new motor vehicle and a consumer, reading it in conjunction, there is no way that the dealership could have...
Do you think that's really what the legislature intended, that a car could be used that period of time and still claim new deal, new car protection? Do you think that's really what was behind this?
I believe what they intended was the protection that whatever period of time a dealership had the car on the lot would not go against. Now, there could be a situation where they buy a car and sales are slow and it sits on the lot for 2 or 3 months, and maybe the owner of the dealership's husband drove the car or her daughter drove the car. And, you know, that doesn't count against the ultimate consumer. I mean, these are things that happen. This happens to be a unique factual scenario that falls within that scope where it has 10,000 miles on it. But under their definition...
It sounds like a scenario that the appellate court was trying to shoehorn into the new lemon law. That's what it feels like.
I would fundamentally disagree with that. I think what they were doing was... taking a car that caught on fire and finding a way that it did qualify. However...
Shoehorning.
Tomato, tomato. But if you look at it, you have to say, maybe in this, playing devil's advocate with myself, you would have to say, maybe that's what happened in this situation, but it's no less applicable under the law. For example, the example of if it had 500 miles on it, they're arguing that that doesn't qualify. My proposition is that there's no difference between the car under the definitions, be if it had, and I will go as far as saying if it had 17,500 miles on it, until that car reaches 18,000 miles, which is the threshold limit set by the legislature, Ohio Revised Code, and this court, that until it transfers to an ultimate purchaser, and before 18,000 miles, you are afforded the lemon law protection. If they had it for 4 years and it had 19,000 miles on it, we're not here today.
Counsel, though, your statute that you're referring to, 4517.01 definition, starts out as used in section 4517.01 to 4517.65. So the definition C, new motor vehicle, is limited specifically to Title 45, those particular sections, doesn't have anything to do with the lemon law, which goes to my question earlier about this case needing to define what new motor vehicle is for purpose of the lemon law.
4517 was enacted prior to Ohio's lemon law, and it's got a...
But there's no reference. There's no cross-reference.
However,
and there's no specific definition in lemon law.
I think it would be directly within the power of the court and proper for this court to say, okay, let's look at other areas within the Ohio Revised Code so that this definition is not inconsistent. And I would argue that my definition is completely consistent when you look at what is the definition of a consumer under 1345.71A, this dealership doesn't meet the definitions of a consumer, which is completely consistent with 4517A.
You've used your time, Mr. Luxembourg.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Keogh, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Two very quick points. First, the Lemon Law and warranty are mutually exclusive. If you make the Lemon Law, you never get to the breach of warranty. The Court of Appeals appears to have suggested that there's recovery under both. And Chief Justice Moore, you asked the question about privity, and I think that's one of the key issues here. This court has never said in the context of an automobile warranty that privity of contract is not required. It is required, and it should be required, as I argued earlier, for the very simple fact that it is commercially unreasonable to hold a manufacturer accountable for the behaviors of the initial owner and then permit downstream owners to take advantage of the bargain of the original buyer. Having said that, without further questions from the court, the appellant would ask that the 11th District be reversed in all respects.
Thank you. Mr. Keogh, the case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.